and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemechek. And I sprang a fast one on Mary Lou today. I told her we'd talk about an article that she hasn't read yet. However, I think that Mary Lou, I didn't think it would be a problem because I know that you've been exposed to this kind of message before. I think any coherent Christian who wants to listen to the Lord on a regular basis knows that things aren't right. Right?
Oh, no kidding.
There is obviously the main point, which is we live in a fallen world and things won't be right until Jesus comes again. So we do know that. And we do know that each age has the problems and the troubles of its age. But on the other hand, we also know that, and it's funny, I decided to do this article, and that was before I realized that there had been another church shooting in Texas. And we're not going to talk about that today. We're not going to talk about the absurdity and the horror of those shootings, of which we've had like two in the past week, nationally known. We're going to hopefully go to the roots of this kind of thing. And, you know, you might say, if you're listening to us here, you might say, hey, the roots are we need gun control. Or somebody else might say, the roots are we don't have enough education. Or somebody else might say, hey, the roots are, you know, whatever. Everybody has a pet theory, right?
Right. And they're all looking for theories about everything now, I guess, to give them some peace of mind. If we can just attach a reason to it. But we know you have to go to the root of things. We have to go back to the very foundation of how God created us and the not the rules, but the guidelines that he gave us to live by. And that's seems to be we seem to be drifting away from that as a culture, obviously.
I know. I'm using as my springboard an article Peter Herbeck wrote in their latest newsletter, Renewal Ministries newsletter. You can get it online at renewalministries.net and just go to the newsletter. It's the latest one. And the article is entitled Culture in Crisis. And I think it kind of says it all, you know, in perhaps terms that maybe some people might find hard to take because it's in a spiritual key. And unfortunately, if you're just oriented to this world, all the solutions need to be worldly solutions. They need to be material solutions. They need to be more education and more gun control and more background checks and more, you know, kind of putting
more,
a band-aid.
More laws. We're going to outlaw.
More laws.
Outlaw bad behavior, which
yeah,
never
exactly.
works.
Yeah, you can't, you know, that's just not possible. But what you can do is invite people to conversion. And I think what we can do, at least you and I, in our own little modest way on these shows, is we can maybe shine a little bitty flashlight. You know, those little, not a big flashlight, but the little the ones you put like in the stocking stuffers for your kids, like a little flashlight. Just a little bit of light on the root causes of what we are experiencing today as a culture. I just came back with my husband. We went away for the weekend to a wedding, and you know, it's when we go away that I end up watching television because I usually don't watch television or not. I don't really watch television. I can hear the news on from the other room. And so I was hearing a lot about just the chaos that we find ourselves in. As American culture, but also I think just straight up world culture. And I think Benedict XVI put it beautifully when he said that when God is pushed to the margins of society, the light that comes with God, because God is light, first, John chapter 1, is by necessity, if you push the light to the side, what happens? Things get
dark.
Right? So if God is reason and he is light and he is love and he is peace and he is the destiny of mankind, the minute you start pushing him to the side, which has been happening for the past 100 years, if not more, ever since the Enlightenment, really, or maybe even before, but as a culture, as an accepted way of looking at things. I don't think we've ever been quite this way since we were an atheist culture, you know, since we were a pagan culture in the first, second, and third centuries AD. So be that as it may, it is fashionable, and it might even be expected to push God to the margins of the human horizon. And when you do that, you push God and his light to the, you know, to the sides, you know, and you don't see. And so therefore you have people stumbling around in the dark, telling each other where the flashlights are, but nobody knows where they are.
You know, I think for a long time, we've been saying things will get better, things will get better. And I think people are feeling as though things are not getting any better. And they're really starting to be more introspective about what is going on in the world and how it is affecting us. So I think this article is quite timely.
Mm-hmm. I would think definitely. I mean, he's quoting an article in the American Conservative blog in August. And you know what? Out there, you might not be an American conservative. You might identify maybe perhaps in another way. I really don't like political labels. I hate to talk about conservative and liberal labels in the faith. I mean, I think there should be, you know, basically, you know, following God and not following God, you know, kind of adhering to the truth and not adhering to the truth. I mean, I don't believe in putting politically polarizing labels on. But in any case, just to source this quotation, he said that what caught his eye is that this guy was concluding that there is some dark chaos in the air. And isn't that right? And isn't that the way it seems like it?
Well, when we hear about all these different shootings and terrible things that are happening around the world, that's exactly what comes to mind, is there is dark chaos. And
yes,
it's everywhere right now.
But it's more than that. What I thought was particularly astute about his observation is he said it's not just people going around shooting each other. It's the deeply confused state of the culture and of our political system, of our educational system. I mean, kids on university campuses are basically, you know, we might as well just pay $40,000 a year to fly our kids to the moon, so that they might never understand how reality really works, right? I mean, you know, it's gotten to that point,
right?
In terms of what kids are getting on most college campuses today. So the educational system, the political system. I mean, look, I can't stand to watch the news. I cannot stand to watch. I mean, really, in the end, all we end up watching in the end is financial news. You know, we watch the, you know, economics, and we watch the financial news. And insofar as the political world is infringing on the financial news, then we get our politics that way. But just to sit there and look at the talking heads unendingly, everybody has their opinion. Everybody is politically tinted. Everybody has an ideological slant, which I imagine is the way it's always been, right? But it just seems there is a deep crisis in communication. Nobody has a discourse anymore. Nobody has a conversation anymore.
Right.
It's you. I'm going to call you a name, and then I'm going to tell you you're a bigot and you're a hater, and then I'm going to never listen to you again. You know, there's no discussion. There's no conversation.
The culture is a reflection of all of us. And right now, I can't identify with the culture because I feel as though I'm coming from a whole different perspective. And mm-hmm. I think that's the way you feel also, and those of us that are Christians, Catholics, whatever it may be, that we see this disorder, and it has reached a crisis point because it's just so prevalent. And as you mentioned, all the different reasons that we're seeing this. And so I think we're just kind of, some days you just feel like you're at your wit's end. You just hate hearing about anything that's happening. Like these shootings or the opiate crisis that the young people are in. So many different things that are going on, and the communication is instantaneous. So we're always aware of all of this.
Yeah, we're inundated. And then what passes for happy news is some brainless, witless celebrity's hairdo.
Exactly.
You know,
or what they wore to something
on the red carpet,
yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, where's the good news? You know, that's what I want to know. Of course, you know,
we know where the good news is.
Don't depend on the media for the good news. But anyway,
no.
And also he quotes Dr. Robbie George, and we've talked about him. He's professor at Princeton of jurisprudence. Things are spinning out of control. Things are spinning out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not
mm-hmm.
to be, not that, like I said, we don't want to be alarmistic, but I think it's important to see. And then he quotes Eric Erickson. a writer. This political confusion is not sustainable. Something is going to give. I do not know what, but something will give. The nation cannot sustain this constant state of chaos and crisis. That's true. We can't. Mm-hmm. You know, how much longer is name calling on a world political level going to not yield something really dreadful? At what level, at what point are things going to be enough? I mean, where's the tipping point, I suppose?
Exactly.
So he's bringing all this stuff to bear, and I'm sure we all have our own examples, because he wants to talk about a moment in which he felt the Lord speaking him quite strongly in 2015 during a mission to Uganda with our good friends Nancy and Lloyd Greenhaw and Deacon Larry Oney. And they were leading a week-long conference for close to 350 priests and bishops at the major seminary in the Archdiocese of Kampala. Towards the end of the week during daily mass, I began to have a very strong sense of the Lord's presence. What he doesn't tell you in this article, which may have been edited out, I don't know, is that he felt like he was under attack. He could not sleep. He had a deep sense of foreboding, of anxiety. And he just, you know, after like not sleeping for 3 nights, he finally got, somebody of the team to pray over him. And immediately it was one of those things where you and I spoke about in the last few shows, mm-hmm. where he was obviously being bothered by some form of spiritual force. And the minute there was prayer, it was lifted.
Exactly.
And so it was lifted to the point where he felt really close to the Lord. And he said, I felt a strong sense of the Lord's presence. I felt simultaneously a deep abiding peace, a feeling of fullness, and a childlike joy, which, you know, bring it on, Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice to have it all the time, right?
I've been asking for that recently.
Right. So, yeah. And then he speaks about, you know, we have addressed this kind of communication of the Lord. It's called prophecy, or an inner word of knowledge, where you really sense the Lord reaching out to you. You know, you sense the Lord communicating certain things. And I must say, you and I have had the experience. You sit down. It helps me when I journal, especially. I at a certain point, I'll pause and I really feel the Lord is saying some very specific things to me. And I'll write them down. And then I'll thank him for the word, and then I'll move on. But then I go back and I read afterwards, like to a month after, a year after, whatever, and I see how right on point those
exactly.
words are. Sometimes he'll be warning me about something, and I'm like, yeah, well, Lord, everything's fine. You know, what's your deal, Lord? You know, like we're so oblivious, really. And the Lord is so good in speaking to us if we would just listen. Right.
That's
remember,
exactly right.
Sister Ann Shields used to say, set an egg timer, you know, set a timer for 5 minutes and then just do nothing but listen. Try to listen to the Lord and he will speak.
And I have to say that when you and I are journaling, we're usually in the Adoration Chapel at mm-hmm. Christ the King is a typical place to do that. So mm-hmm. I would suggest this to people to take some time and stop in there and have that personal visit with the Lord.
That's right. So at a certain point, he felt the Lord beginning to talk to him about a spiritual battle that is unfolding in the world, which, you know, I don't think we don't need the Lord to intervene to tell us that, right?
Right.
I want to share with you the simple, direct words. And he's very humble because he's basically submitting these words for our discernment in the newsletter. He said Ralph encouraged him to share them. He shared them in a meeting in September as well. And in my spirit, my answer is yes. You know, my discernment, little discernment faculties, my very small discernment faculties, leap up to agree with him. You know, and oftentimes mm-hmm. that's the way the Holy Spirit works, right? Mm-hmm. Even when it's bad news. This is what he heard. Peter, the spiritual battle is about to intensify. It will pick up pace. Chaos, apostasy, rage, and confusion will increase. God help us all, you know?
Exactly.
God help us all. My judgment is coming upon the world, and it is my mercy. What is coming will flatten and expose the emptiness of all the idols that hold my people in bondage. Warn, console, inspire, and correct. Proclaim my majesty and glory. Have no anxiety about anything. No one can change my purposes. The mighty of the world are about to be brought down.
Now, I don't think that he's the only one that has had this sense. I know a lot of people that would be saying things very similar to this. So I give it a lot of credence. And, you know, we don't know God's timing or anything, but it is certainly nothing to be afraid of.
Let me just share with you something. I know I've told you that before, but for our two listeners, whoever's out there, when I was a teenager, I was blessed enough to attend the 1975 Catholic Charismatic Renewal Conference in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And at that time, we had praise and worship, and we were with the Pope. We were hanging with Paul the Sixth. It was great. We had Mass. And at a certain point, there was a time for certain kinds of prophetic words. Now, remember, if you've been listening to our show, we've kind of explained to you what these prophetic words are. They're senses, they're feelings, they're words given by God to a certain person, people, event, situation, etc. At a certain point, Ralph Martin gave this prophecy, and I'll never forget it, in the middle of St. Peter's Basilica. And
this was in
1975.
Yeah.
And it was basically, get ready because things are changing. Get ready because structures that you have been relying upon in the past will no longer be there. Be ready because the hard times are coming, basically. That was, you know, the essence of it. And, you know, I was 17. What do I know? I was like, oh, my gosh, that's terrible. And then I remember thinking, as the years progressed, well, this is probably something that people in the future will have to deal with. I probably in my lifetime won't have to deal with it.
It's always nice to be in that denial stage,
right?
But then
lo and behold, things are just going to hell in a handbasket, if you'll just forgive my French. I mean, seriously.
It's at warp speed, as they used to say in Star Trek.
Really thinking, hey, you know, this stuff is happening. I remember it's basically what it has it done, this idea, this word that I heard at this conference. It's kind of been in the background of most of my adult life. Mm. And it's only in the past, 10 years that I've really figured out, hey, holy cow, this stuff is happening now. It's happening within my lifetime. I was hoping that I might to be able to be oblivious. But in fact, it is happening now, this big spiritual battle.
But remember, we've witnessed all of this, at least from my standpoint, starting in the 60s, where the mm-hmm. culture started changing and accepting mm-hmm. things that we would view as being wrong and against God, and making it common and acceptable. And we could go on and on and on. But we've seen so many trends in society that are now approving things that shouldn't be approved. And we've seen that lately with marriage and, you know, the laws that control that in society. So there is a lot going on. There is mm-hmm. a lot.
You know, Romans 1 never used to scare me until we really started studying Romans 1. Mm-hmm. Well, the letter to the Romans, but especially the first couple chapters where Paul outlines kind of what's wrong with the world and gives a nice wake up call about, hey guys, this is what happens if you push God out of your horizon. Your mind becomes futile. They became futile in their thinking, and their senseless minds were darkened. Yep.
Well, that's what Pope Benedict was saying.
The futility.
The mm-hmm.
I love that word. You know, if you don't know what it is, go and Google it, the word futility. It just means that you're just there trying to stop an avalanche with a teaspoon. I mean, that's a definition, mm-hmm. I think, of futility. Like you think that you're getting all hot and bothered and you're making a difference. And in fact, you're not making any difference at all. If anything, you're spinning your wheels. I think that's a great definition of futility. And he had some scripture passages to back this up. First is Jeremiah 2, verses 19 through 21. Quote, your wickedness will punish you and your apostasies will convict you. Know and see that it is evil and bitter for you to forsake the Lord your God. The fear of me is not in you, says the Lord God of hosts. Now, what is the context of Jeremiah? Jeremiah had, unfortunately, the misfortune to be prophesying to the apostate kingdom of Judah on the eve of the Babylonian invasion, during the Babylonian invasion, and after the Babylonian invasion. So unfortunately, he had the great distinction of saying, hey guys, it's coming, it's coming, uh-oh, it's here, and then afterwards, see what happened, which, you know, nobody likes a prophet who says that kind of stuff, right? In fact,
no.
Jeremiah, in his own lifetime, had no friends.
Of course.
The Lord told him not to get married. He had no family. I mean, poor Jeremiah. Anyway, but this passage is, your apostasies will convict you. So you cannot be an apostate if you are not a believer to begin with. Apostasy is somebody who is a baptized believer who turns their back on the faith. It's not a pagan. It's not somebody who never was baptized or never heard the truth. So that's what I think is particularly chilling. Your apostasies will convict you. You know better. You've received the truth, and still you insist on pushing God away to the margins of society. That's all we have today. We hope you will join us next time.